Hey, hello everyone and welcome for one more episode of the World Class Designer. Today with me I have the designer Anna Dreher from the US. So Anna is here to share with us a bit of her stories and what she would suggest for her younger self to become a better or a world class designer. So like without further ado, hello Anna and welcome to the show. Oh, can you talk a bit about yourself and so people can know you?
Yes, thank you. Glad to be here today. I live in Georgia, in the United States, in the North Georgia area, and married with two dogs, great big dogs, just love animals. And I love to read and love solving mysteries. So that's kind of how I fell into design and product and all of that world. It was sort of a love for solving mysteries that followed me throughout my career.
Okay. So like I've seen on your profile, Anna, that you start working as a graphic designer. So can you tell us your transitions from graphic designer and now from product manager and how that happened?
Yeah. So I actually went to college and got a degree in a Bachelor of Arts in graphic design and fine art, and did a lot of different classes. I did sculpture classes and painting classes and graphic design. And it was back when graphic designers pretty much did design work, but they didn't do any kind of coding. They didn't touch anything really digital. It's kind of like you had designers, did a lot of press checks, went to a lot of printers and made a lot of print materials and display materials and things like that. And then you had your developers who worked in a different part of the company, and you would give them your design files and they would make it into something digital. So there was this kind of like, it was a very split world when I was going through school and coming out of school. And a couple of years in, I was working for a creative ad agency, did an internship at one and then worked for a couple of years in another one, and just started kind of seeing that the way of the world was changing. And if I wanted to be competitive and I wanted to really take, you know, control of my career and my life, I needed to add some more skills and not just rely on, you know, got this degree, so now I'm good to go. So I ended up working in a startup at one point that was doing more kind of like a daily deals type of thing, like a Groupon, based in Atlanta. And I started taking some coding online courses that were free, I think, through Code Academy at the time, to learn HTML and CSS so I could kind of transition myself to a hybrid designer, which is what they were called back then, kind of learning both digital skills and print skills. And I really started positioning myself more towards the digital side of things, seeing that websites were, you know, responsive design was becoming more popular, email design. We were coming out of the early 2000s and needing some more advanced techniques than what people had been using 10 years ago. So from there, I transitioned to another company as a full-time designer, working in the, it was actually for an international company based out of Japan and the US office that did building manufacturing supply. So I took some more classes, learned some more skills, started really trying out some digital design stuff. And that's what got me in the door to the company where I'm currently working. So I started in their operations department as a digital media designer. And all this time I'd been taking other classes or reading books, trying to enhance my skills, learn new things to get where I wanted to go. And I kind of fell into product because I would give the developers ideas, and then they actually started coming to me and asking me for ideas about how to enhance our operations process and how to make things better for their internal customers. I ended up standing up a email design system, which was a modular framework that the designers could use to build emails for all of our clients. At the time, we went from everyone just kind of coding things from scratch. There was no really shared code. It was kind of like the Wild West, everything was all over the place, to moving it into this framework where everything was responsive. It was built in the system where you could just pop one piece in and pop another piece out. If you didn't like it, you could easily change the colors and styles and things. So it significantly reduced the production time, but also elevated the standard of coding so that it was consistent across the board. At that point, I had started having conversations with the chief product officer for about a year. And because it is a smaller company, it's probably a medium-sized company, there's a lot of opportunity in companies that are a little bit smaller, medium-sized, if you want to grow and learn a lot of things, because you don't have to necessarily get stuck in a position just as a cog, you know, in the wheel. If you're the kind of person who likes a lot of challenge, that can be a really good environment if it's a good company with a good future and some growth potential. So those kind of companies have always attracted me, and I was able to move over fully into the product department a few years ago, starting as a product owner and then for consumer products, and then moving my way into product manager. So I've kind of been self-taught in a good part, had a lot of mentorship as well from the CPO and from some senior developers in the company that really advocated for me and helped me kind of find my way into this role that now I really love. So that's kind of what I hope is a short summary.
Yeah, that's quite a journey. I could feel like I think like I can feel this need from a lot of people, especially in my country, that they kind of know that they have to make themselves relevant, because there is a lot of like media or graphic designers. And I think you explaining this is a really, really good example, like for them, of how someone make a shift from graphic design to product design. It's quite interesting story. So like, tell me, you know, so how do you explain now, like, your design process? Like, doesn't like even like product design process, I know now you're working like with developers and more people in your team. So how do you organize that? But how would you explain that for yourself, like years ago when you started?
So I actually loved this question when I saw it come over in the Google Doc. And it's because I think no matter what kind of design you go into, whether it's a product design or a graphic design or any other style, unless you're self-funded and you can just make whatever you want, one of the first hard lessons to learn is that it's not about you.
Okay.
And you have to get yourself out of the way, I think. So especially people who are geared towards, you know, being more artistic or more design-oriented, even with design thinking or in product design, sometimes there can be a little bit of an ego or a desire that gets in the way to, like, I really want to see my idea come to life. And the reality is that when we're being paid to do a job like that, it's not about me being able to see my idea or my design come to life. It's about meeting the need of the customer or the company in that particular scenario through really elegant design. So I think that that's just something that I would mention to my younger self about the design process. And I would also say it's really important to make sure you're identifying the right problems before you just jump into trying to design for them.
That's, I think, like the problem part seems so small, but is the most important part of this whole process.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, I think people generally spend a lot of time on the kind of the back half of it, where they've come up with a prototype or an idea, they're really excited about it, they test it, they put all these resources towards it. And you really need to spend a lot more time towards the front end of it, making sure you've identified the right problems and going back and reworking that process until you know, like, this is the right thing to solve. And then we can figure out what's the best way to solve it. But so many times we're putting resources and time and energy and developers into things that it's like, well, we didn't even really validate that that was the right problem. And now we're surprised that we're having trouble 6-9 months down the road.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's a very common problem that we face as designers, especially when we are still in early stages of our careers. So like you said, like you have to know that it's not about you, it's not about yourself, it's about solving the client's problem. How did you overcome that? How long it took you to learn that?
I would say I'm still learning that.
Okay.
But, you know, lifelong learner. But I was very fortunate to be able to participate in the leadership development company. It's called Drive at the company where I'm working now. And I've been participating in that for the past 5 years. And being able to have someone really invest in your training like that has been a game changer.
Okay.
We've done a lot of books together, a lot of discussions as a group. But just I remember there was kind of a light switch moment that went off where I just started connecting these things and I had a mindset shift. And I think I may have gotten there eventually on my own because I just love to learn anyway, but it definitely sped up the process of me getting there in a good way to be, to participate with something like that. So I think it's about being open to other perspectives and not being so tied to your own self-perception that you can't invite good feedback from people that you can trust.
I see. That's nice. Related to that, I will ask, which mistakes would you tell your younger self to make?
I would say take risks.
Okay. Can you be more precise? Which type of risks?
Yeah. So in your career, especially when you're young and you don't have a lot of attachments, maybe that's really a time to take risk and explore things. If you don't like, if you get out of college or if you don't go to college and you're in some kind of position that you don't particularly like, you know, however you got there, if you don't like it, you don't have to stay in it for the rest of your life. It's the time to make those changes. It's the time to start setting the trajectory for yourself. So if you have an opportunity to go on a big trip, take it. Like, I love international travel. It just really broadens my perspective on the world. And there are opportunities that I passed on because I thought, oh, it's going to cost too much money when I was younger. And now I think, you know, if I had just done that thing, if I'd gone on that course or taken the class or taken the trip or something, I'm sure that that would have really been a wonderful memory or wonderful enhancement to my life. Or if I had kind of like jumped down on a limb a little bit, like what's the worst thing that can happen? Like it doesn't work out, right? Most of the time it's just, you know, things aren't going to work out and you're going to have failure, but you're going to have failure throughout your whole career. And it's better to get used to it early and be able to figure out how to process through it and learn from it than it is to kind of be hesitant about the steps you're making because you're afraid to fail. So I'm not saying like go quit your job without any backup and, you know, travel the world or anything, but there's definitely, there's a line there of, you know, use wise judgment, but make sure it's your own judgment and not other people telling you to do something safe just because they're risk averse.
Did you do that?
Oh, no, I have not traveled the whole world yet. I've just been to a few countries.
No, but like taking risks, did you?
I did. The first school I went to was in a different state from my hometown. So that was a big deal. I came from a small town, very small town.
Okay.
So going 8 hours away to a different state was like, felt like being, you know, not quite in a different country, but, you know, not having family or anybody that I knew around really forced me to kind of be self-reliant and learn some skills pretty quickly. Same with my work, moving to a new city for work where I didn't know anyone really. I had a couple of family members, but, you know, just having to kind of put myself out there on a limb. And actually, that's how I met my husband, was putting myself out on a limb. I went out with some friends I didn't know very well. I was a fifth wheel. It was two other couples and me. And I was new to the city, and I was like, you know what? Why not? I want to open myself up. I want to meet people. I want to do things. And he happened to be there, and the rest was history. Nice. So there, nice. Yeah, there are good things that can happen when you put yourself out there.
Nice. So what would you recommend your younger self to focus on? Like, you know, that skills end up becoming something extremely valuable for you now.
Yes. So this actually ties into my book recommendations as well. But relationship building and learning how to listen well.
Okay.
Are the two things I would say. Because I think when we talk about skills, we often think about like learning a software or a particular tool or really mastering a language or something like that. And those are all great things. All those hard skills are fantastic. But I think what's gotten me to the point where I am in my career and what will continue to take me farther is learning how to listen well and learning how to build good, authentic relationships with people.
Okay.
And I think those transfer to any kind of career that you're in, but they will open doors for you that hard skills won't always open. And they also make up for a lack of some things. Somebody with a good attitude who can build good relationships can learn some of those technical skills. But someone with only technical skills who's difficult to work with, it's going to be really hard for them to move up in their career.
I see. So people skills.
Yeah. And I think that once you get to a certain point, you also need to really practice the art of influence, which is a lot of people skills. And if you haven't been working on that before and you're thrust into that position, that's going to make it a lot harder for you.
I see. Okay. Like you already mentioned about books. So like which books you think you learned the most and you suggest your younger self to read them again? And which one would you like to include on the list?
Yeah, so I actually picked up two here. One is, I know we're not doing the video, but The Zen of Listening.
Okay.
By Rebecca Shafir. It's not a business book in particular. It's written by a speech pathologist. But what I love about this book is she has a questionnaire at the beginning that you can fill out that basically helps you identify where your gaps are with your listening skills. And then she points you to different chapters that you can read to supplement your listening skills and learn how to increase your ability to listen well.
Can you repeat the title again, please?
The Zen of Listening.
The Zen of Listening. I'm adding that to my list right now.
It's also a great audiobook, I will say. I got the paperback book as well just because I wanted to be able to, you know, go back and take some notes and things. But I think it's also an Audible. And then the other one that I liked, I read a few years ago, is called Ego versus EQ. And it's How Top Leaders Beat 8 Ego Traps with Emotional Intelligence. So okay. Again, just kind of that little kick in the pants reminder. It's not about you. And if you always focus on yourself and you're not open to getting critical feedback, especially as you move higher up in leadership, it can become a real problem.
Okay. Ego versus IQ.
EQ.
EQ. Yep. Okay.
And that's by Jen Shirkani.
So which people would you advise your younger self to follow? Like imagine if they are like good references.
Yeah, you know, I took a walk in the park as I was thinking about these questions. And something I meant to mention on the books that I think ties into this question is I think it's important to read and be well-rounded. So I don't just read business books or personal development books. I also read fiction and I read, books to enhance my spiritual life as well. And so I have people in my life that I would consider to be spiritual mentors. I have an aunt in particular that I'm really close with. I have some professional mentors that I follow that I've sort of gotten to know through networking as I've grown in my product career, who have been great resources to me to just bounce things off of. But I think that whatever kind of person you want to follow, either as a mentor, kind of informal mentor from a distance where you're just following their content, or that you're actually talking to, it needs to be somebody who's authentic and willing to kind of give a hand to people that are coming up behind them, and is producing valuable content that really helps you, not just trying to promote a brand or be an influencer, if that makes sense. I don't have anything against influencers, but I think that it can be a little bit more difficult nowadays to sort out what's really valuable and what's going to serve you well versus what's kind of somebody who's just promoting themselves.
I see.
If that makes sense. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you're really following people who are not only telling you, you know, giving good advice, but actually living their advice and proving that it works.
I see.
So you want to see the results,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I see. Like that's very important. Yeah. Like you can see like authenticity in the people, which is kind of hard to find nowadays. So which tools will you suggest your younger self to learn to become expert?
I think from a product perspective, learning data analytics, how to do analytics well is really important. I'm actually taking a course on that right now because it's an area I have a little bit of a weakness in. And it's the thing I'm learning about data is you can just really play with it and cut it so many different ways, but understanding best practices around that and ethical considerations and things like that is it's very important, especially if you're going to do anything that's, you know, make data-driven decisions. It's not going to tell you that there's an error. It's not going to give you like a 404 error that you did something wrong. You're just going to draw the wrong conclusion. So it's, I think, particularly important in product to not just, you know, look at data, but really become an expert in understanding data. So I'd say that, and then I do think it's helpful personally to know enough of at least one coding language to be able to kind of translate or understand some of what's happening in the engineering team. Even if they're using 8 or 10 different languages, it just is, it's helpful to know one that's kind of a baseline, just as a framework to inform some of those conversations. But that's just me. I found it helpful to have a little bit of technical background as I've moved into a position where I need to influence and help kind of make decisions around product development.
Nice. I think that is really, really important. On the analytics part, I also learned, from the beginning of my career, I was forced to understand data. I didn't start as designer. And when I started working as full-time as designer, I realized how important being able to read, interpret, and understanding data to the design process, because by the end of the day, you're solving problems and you have to be able to qualify and quantify those problems, and having those skills are extremely important.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I underline that. So Anna, tell me what you wouldn't tell your younger self.
So as I was thinking about, I was thinking about this question. I would not tell my younger self that I can't do it. And I would also not tell my younger self that I could do it all, because I think you need to know that you can do it if you really want to, but it's also going to require some work and some sacrifices on your part. So you might not be able to do it all at the same time, but can do what you set your mind to if you work hard enough. It's just, are you willing to do the work?
Nice. That's a very philosophical answer.
My husband would like that. He was a philosophy major before he became a designer, so he's very philosophical.
Okay, nice. I see where the answer comes from. How much from your current professional success would you attribute to luck, and how much do you think it's because you worked hard?
Well, if I'm being honest, I think a good part of it, is due to the fact that I was born into a place and a home where I had parents who prioritized my education and paid for me to be able to attend college and do some other things. And they weren't super wealthy or anything, but I definitely got a leg up from being able to have an education like that. And I don't think college is always necessary for everyone. That just happened to be the path that I took. But I would say that there was some either luck or providence at work there. But I don't, you know, I wasn't responsible for being born in that situation, you know. So there was some fortune that came to me through that. I think in subsequent years of hardships after I kind of got my first boost, I think most of my career transitions have been more of the result of hard work, but I kind of had a boost to get there. And then as I've come to know other people and networked with people, you know, that always broadens your opportunities as well. You never know who you meet that could end up being a helpful relationship later. And I don't mean that in the sense of, you know, just meeting people intending to use them, but as you build mutually beneficial, authentic relationships throughout your career, it just opens up doors that you might not otherwise have had. So I'd say, yeah, probably 50-50, to be honest.
Okay. So it's still important, like, working hard then. Nice. That was, like, my last question for you, Anna. So to close this, do you have any question for me?
Yeah, I would love to hear more about what you do and your kind of design philosophy and how you approach your work.
That's a tricky one, because I don't do much design. I love design. I wish I could like spend most of my time doing that, but I spend most of my time like helping other people becoming designers, because I'm not sure if this is luck or is my curse. I can't see the broader view, so I feel selfish when I'm enjoying being a designer, knowing that I can take other people, like I can improve other people's lives. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this makes sense. So I spend most of my time like working in projects and programs that end up helping other people becoming a better designer. I wish I could spend more time doing design work. Like I love like product design, like designing software. I love criticizing how people do like software, like interactions, like UX writing, micro changes, UIs, animations, and all those things. I love delighting people through like a screen, like with a really good experience. But at the same time, I can't do that, because I know that it's not a good way to use my time. Because by the end of the day, the number of people that I touch, like the number of people that I'm able to help, it's more like gratifying, like for me, and I think it's also I see as my obligation for the world, like to help other people having a better careers and a better future. So yeah.
Well, I love that, and I think it's a very unselfish way to use your gifts and your skills to help other people.
I wish I was selfish. Trust me. I beat myself every day for not being able to do that. Yeah. So, but what can I do? It's my calling, I think.
It's important to know what your calling is. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show as well. So this is my first podcast interview, so that's pretty exciting for me.
Yeah, I saw you like in an event that I did with
Decolonizing Design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I saw the questions that you were putting there. So I can see, you know when I think I can recognize smart people when I see one. So I saw the type of questions that you put it. There was like, this is okay. A nice person to know. Like, not everyone can write this. Not everyone can think like this. So you can kind of know how people are based on how they communicate. So this is what caught my attention.
Well, I just recommended that ego versus EQ, but thank you. That was an ego boost. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, Anna, so where can people find you online?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Hannah Dreher, and I'm a lurker on Twitter, so I don't post a lot, but if you find me, I will follow you back.
Okay, nice. So, Anna, thanks for your time to come into the show, and hopefully see you next time.
All right, sounds great. Thanks.